Hey, everybody, it's me, Tom Papa. Welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, the podcast slash radio show slash time-wasting joy. Hope you're doing all right. I have a great interview to share with you today with the comedian, the very funny, the very talented Ari Shaffir. Ari is a very good guy, a very good comedian. And he has a new show coming out on Comedy Central called This Is Not Happening. It's a storytelling show of which I tell a story at some point. I think it went pretty well. It's a cool show and a cool venue, and I think you're going to enjoy it. But this interview was done well before all of that, when I just wanted to get to know him better and learn about him and his comedy. And it's a good guy. He's a good guy, and it's a good interview, and you're going to enjoy it as the first one of 2015. Yep, we made it through. Happy New Year to you. Hope your holidays went well. It's a thing. It definitely is a thing. Whether you celebrate a lot or you just are in the flow of America, it's a thing. A lot goes on. There is momentum, and it is a tsunami of food and commerce and activity. Holy cannolis. I went to the supermarket yesterday. First time I've been in the place since Christmas Eve, when I was making last minute return trips to get ingredients and things that we needed to complete our festivities. And it was madness. It was madness back then. There was just melee. Fun, kind of exciting, knowing that you're out there with all the other boobs that forgot ricotta cheese or semi-sweet chocolate morsels. You forgot something, and you're all out there panicking, getting it all done at the last minute, and can't find parking. It's just a craziness, just complete insanity. So when I went back yesterday, it was, oh, a joy. It was like walking out on a battlefield after the war was over. Yeah, there's signs of ugliness. You see a little blood there and limb in the rice-a-roni aisle. It's definitely not pretty, but it's calm. And just people are just shopping for one little meal. Not that insanity that we just went through, where everywhere you go, people are eat this, have this cookie, put this chocolate dip thing in this Italian pastry puff with this drink filled with milk and nutmeg and booze, and eat this, smoke this, drink this, and you just can't stop, and you swell up like a tick, and you're just ready to literally explode. And then comes the part where you just have to throw it all out of the house. I came home and it was still a box of chocolates, and there's still like something we didn't eat, and you start eating it. Just reflex. You're just like, candy. I gotta eat more. It was so nice to just be buying a little broccoli, going to the deli counter, and I'm the only guy there. Buy a couple items, cruise along, get some fruit, some normality. Oh, I feel like in Willy Wonka, where you got to go to the dejuicing stop and just let them squeeze it all out. I am fat. And now I just, and then you look at the house and it's like, oh, now I got to get rid of Christmas. Now I got to get all of this stuff that we pulled out of the attic with such joy, just handing down boxes of stuff. What's in there? Do you remember this from last year? Oh, look at that. Yeah, put it on the counter. Why not have a snowman on the counter for a month? Yeah. Now you're just looking at it like, what are we going to do with this goddamn snowman? I don't know where the box is. You know where the box is? We should just throw it out. No, you can't throw it out. Just put it back. We got to get back in the attic. You shouldn't have thrown out all the boxes. I told you when you were cleaning up on Christmas Day, you shouldn't have. You should have kept a couple boxes for the Back to a chore. It's back to a big chore. There's a giant tree in my living room filled with candy, and we didn't think it had enough stuff on it, so we just kept filling it up more and more and more. And I got to take it all down. My wonderful village underneath. I'm going to be smart, though. I'm going to plan it. I'm going to wrap things. Try and put them away orderly. Big markers on the box. So next year, it's just a little bit easier. That's my plan. I know it's not going to happen. But man, it's ugly. The thing I'm really worried about is getting back on the roof and getting the lights out. Off the peak, let me be a good dad. Won't my kids be excited when they see that there's lights on the peak of the roof? Won't they just look up there at this magical Christmas wonder and thank their father? I got kind of that response. I got a little of that response. Most of it was, what about that part over there? It's kind of dark. How about we fill in that? Well, now I got to go back up there and get those lights down. The problem is there's no enthusiasm. A job is easy to do when you have enthusiasm. It doesn't matter what it is, right? You're into it. Doesn't matter. You want to rip a whole house down? You're into it. You're going to do it. You're going to do it quickly. You're going to do it well, aggressively, because there's enthusiasm. There's passion. Putting those lights up was nothing. Got a ladder. I had the Amazon guy hold the ladder so I can fly up there. Bam, bam, bam. Came back down. Amazon guy was gone. Doesn't matter. Jumped on the ladder, went down myself. I was motivated and the enthusiasm, Christmas holiday enthusiasm to put up that tree, line all the lights up, get the big blinking things in the windows. Yeah, put more reindeers on the mantle. Get more candles. More. Enthusiasm. Went up. It was a month-long project. Now I'm going to tear it all down in a couple hours, and there's not much enthusiasm. This is a grind. This is a bloody grind. But that's what January is about, isn't it? January is a bit of a grind. Holidays are done, the momentum is over, and now you're just left with winter, and you're just kind of treading water. All right, back to work. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can't lose some weight, fix things up, clip my nails, brush my hair, get out in the world and do something, even though winter is making me want to stay inside as much as possible. And that's where the NFL comes in. That's where the playoffs come in. Oh, they're already good, aren't they? I don't care if you like football or not. My kids don't like it. My wife doesn't like it. But they like it in January, leading up to the Super Bowl, sitting inside, cozy, cozy, drinking chocolate, looking at people outside in the cold, knowing you're not them, watching pizza commercials. Joy, joy, joy. Oh, what an awful Dallas game. Oh, I hear you, Dallas fans. Good for you. You outplayed them. The call. I get it. It's not all about the call. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. It's just as a Giants fan to watch Fat Christie, Governor Chris Blubberload Christie, hugging Jerry Jones in the booth in a red sweater like a trophy wife. Just awful. What are you thinking? This is New Jersey, the Giants. It runs deep in families in that entire state. Do you think the mayor of Wisconsin would show up in a Chicago Bears booth hugging the owner? Never. Never. Packer fans would build a fence around the state, dominate the airspace, and not allow him back. That's what Giant fans feel for this big enchilada in a red sweater, bouncing up and down. You don't hug Jerry. Who hugs Jerry Jones? Even if you're a Dallas fan, you're not hugging the crypt creep keeper. You don't hug Skeletor. Even if you like him, you give him a little nod from the corner of the booth. Good job, JJ. You don't hug him like our slobbering golden retriever of a governor. He's obviously had it. He's done with the state. He's like, you know what? You bust me closing the bridges. I'm running for president. Even if I don't make it, I'm getting out of here. Going to Dallas. Oh, what a creep. It really made the ending of that game just so comical. I don't care who you're rooting for. You watch that. That was like, what just happened? Oh, but that's what's good about the playoffs. It's going to be some good drama, some good cultural sweep, getting a bunch of us to do the same stuff at the same time. That's why I like these events. Even if you're not in it, even if you're not remotely interested, you're walking through the supermarket, you feel the buzz of other people doing and getting ready. It just you just feel it, like the holidays. You just feel that momentum around us. And that'll be January. That'll get us to the Super Bowl, where I will be solo in Florida. I am touring around, and I'm starting in D.C. at the D.C. Improv Super Bowl weekend. And that Sunday, I don't have a show. I've got to go to Florida for our next gig on that Monday, and I will be solo, which is very unusual, very anti-American. I usually spend it with my family. We just hook up with people and do the thing, and it's always fun. But I got to say, between you and me, the idea of zigging when they're zagging, alone, hotel, room service, Super Bowl, I'm kind of looking forward to it. Don't tell anybody, but I'm kind of thinking that's going to be fun. What we have now is a great interview with Ari Shaffir, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you look up TomPapa.com, and I hope you go follow me on Twitter and Facebook. A lot of stuff coming up, coming to D.C., going to Denver, going to San Francisco with live Come to Papa. We've got another show at Largo coming up, which we're doing once a month in L.A., but we're moving the whole troupe to Sketchfest up in San Francisco the first weekend of February. I think it's the 6th. So lots of stuff going on. Denver, Jersey, Chicago, theaters in Florida, Ruth Eckerd Hall. A lot of places to go do comedy and spread the word. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Come see me live. And listen right now to my interview with the very talented Ari Shaffir. Come to Papa. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Come to Papa. I am Tom Papa, and I like you a lot. My guest today is the very funny comedian and youthful curmudgeon Ari Shaffir. Ari has a free-form, uncensored style to his comedy. He's bitingly funny, and you can hear, as you can hear, on his special Passive Aggressive on Chill and Revenge for the Holocaust, available on iTunes. And he brings a complete freedom to his stand-up, which I really respect, and so do a lot of other comedians. He's very well-respected, very well-liked. You're very welcome. Ari is also a very good actor. He pops up on TV and films, most recently alongside Rob Scheider and Adrian Brody in the movie Inappropriate Comedy. He's also has a very funny podcast, Skeptic Tank, and you can get it and find all this stuff on arishaffir.com. Ari, we know each other, but we don't really know each other.
We really don't. I've met you like twice, three times or something.
Yeah, and we come into clubs and you'd be on stage or vice versa, I would imagine. Yeah. And I'm really cool. I'm happy to sit down because I know when you get a good vibe from certain people because you know they're out there doing the thing and they're doing it the right way, it's but you just don't run into them for whatever reason. But we have all these other people in our lives who we know really well.
We both know Morrissey. He always speaks well of you.
Yeah, Morrissey and Jimmy Dore and a lot of good people. So thanks for coming out and doing this.
You're welcome. Yeah, whenever I saw you, it was the same sort of thing where I always knew you as a guy who wore a suit.
Right.
At first, I was like, there's no way I can be into this comedy. Right. I saw you at the Ice House. I was like, oh, he's legitimately good. Take off the fucking suit.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd see you, and I'm like, wow, everyone says he's so nasty. And it's like, I can't possibly... How am I going to like him? It's like, oh, he's got great jokes.
It's amazing how you can write people off and then give them one chance.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, I can tell why they're a successful comedian.
Right. So I was listening to a little of your Skeptic Tank podcast, and it's really good.
With Dore?
With it was with Tom Rhodes.
Okay. Man, that guy's cool.
Yeah, he is a really cool guy. He's a great comedian. And I'm going to get him on this show. We tried to put it together last time I was in L.A., and it didn't work out. But, yeah, he's a super cool guy. But what I gleaned from it, I didn't get that deep into it. But I, from what I – are you moving back to New York or moving
now,
to New York?
Starting yesterday.
You just moved to New York?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks, dude.
Wow, that's a big step. Now, you were L.A. for a long time.
I started in L.A. I've been there the whole time.
Comedy life?
Yeah.
Wow. Where'd you come from before you went to, like, where did you
Maryland.
Grow up?
I graduated from University of Maryland.
And then went straight out to L.A.?
Yeah, I didn't want to get a job.
Oh. But you knew I'm going into comedy or I'm going to be an actor?
I said screenwriter because I took a couple classes in college. I didn't have the guts to tell them I was going to do something that I never even tried.
Right. Who's they? Your parents?
Everybody. Friends, parents. How could you say, like, I'm going to be a comic? They'd be like, well, how could you be?
You don't know how to do that. You've never done it.
Yeah. So it was kind of like both, but then comedy took over immediately.
Did you have a friend that you moved out there with, or did you just go
by yourself? Yeah, this guy from high school and college who moved to Miami, but he kept saying, let's go.
Right.
And then we did.
Oh, was he into it also?
He wanted to be a screenwriter. He's a lawyer now in New York, but he wanted to be a screenwriter.
Right.
And we caravaned across. He had to drive the speed limit because he would smoke pot the whole way.
Right.
And just hotbox his car, and then I could drive faster and find a place to stay at night.
You weren't smoking weed?
Not then.
No?
Uh-uh.
Oh, that's funny.
I thought it was drugs back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was all under the drugs umbrella. I think I had it a couple times.
Right.
But that was it.
But you smoke weed now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the time.
And your favorite holiday?
420.
420?
Is that what you're asking?
No.
Oh,
it was another holiday. Shroomfest.
Yeah, it's coming up. Dude, how did you know about that?
I know about you and Shroomfest.
I started an international mushroom festival. Do you do mushrooms at all?
A bunch of times when, like college and the slightly thereafter.
Yeah. When's the last time?
A long time ago. I would probably say, I'm going to put it at 1991.
Whoa.
Yeah.
22 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's time again, man.
You know, it's funny, when I was, I never had a bad time with it. I really liked it.
Uh-huh.
And I remember seeing a quote by Jerry Garcia saying that he would do it like every, I don't know, maybe year or 6 months or something like that.
I like that time limit, times up, yeah.
Yeah, and he said it was, for him, it was cleaning out the pipes.
Yeah.
Which is really a good way to look.
Yeah,
to look at it.
It helps recenter me too.
Does
six
it?
Months to a year. I completely agree with Jerry Garcia for the first time.
Right.
And the beard, I guess.
Right. Not his music. Not that weird half finger thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But why is a song lasting 45 minutes?
Right.
Go to the next one.
There was a great Stu Kamens was a comedian in New York. I don't know if he still does it, but he had a funny joke when I was coming up. He said, the Grateful Dead, I was always wondering, why do you have to do drugs when you listen to the Grateful Dead? And then I realized, oh, because if you don't do drugs, their music sucks.
Yeah, I was never able to get into it.
So Shroomfest, you really love this,
yeah,
this holiday.
I started a holiday. I figured we should all do it one day. I thought we should all do it. My friend his parents have a beach house in Malibu.
Right.
I was like, let's all go to Benji's place and do mushrooms. And then I was like, well, let's invite everyone. And then I think I said it online or something. Some people were like, I want to participate. I'm like, well, you're not going to be invited. We're not inviting strangers to our mushroom or
yeah,
acid
that would
trips.
Be weird.
Yeah, but I just said, let's just make a day for everyone to do it. And all these kids complained that I've said it in like May.
Uh-huh.
They're like, I still got finals. I was like, good point. Let me change that so everyone can participate.
Let me adjust the holiday.
So every summer.
Really?
This summer it falls June 22nd to 24th.
Oh, it's a several day affair.
It's a 3 day. Yeah, you can do it at any point over those 3 days. I'm all about responsible drug use.
Right.
So if you've got a test, let's say on Monday, right. Do it on Saturday.
Right.
You know,
plan
or vice
it out.
Versa. Yeah. Wedding on Sunday, save it for the next day.
And how do you handle it? How do you? Because you're running it, so do you have to have your wits about you a little bit? Or?
No. I mean, well, it happens all over the world. I just set the date. So people did it like in Ireland and England and Israel. And
I like that you just say something on your podcast now. It's happening all around the world.
It does. It was amazing. This is the third year we're doing it. I love it.
That's great. How many people do you think participate?
Someone did it on a glacier. I think thousands and thousands of people.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I've taken myself out of the holiday. Like, people are like, you should sell t-shirts. I'm like, it ain't about that.
It's not mine. It's
just, right, exactly.
Right.
It's the world's.
So what do you do on that weekend? Do you just do it once? Because once you do it, you're not rebooting again the next night, are you?
I have done it last year I did it twice.
You did?
Yeah. And I found out you have to take like a week or two off in between or it doesn't hit you nearly as hard.
Oh, I was going to say the opposite. I was going to say, but when you starts kicking in that second time, I'd be like, oh, really? Here we go again.
Back to this again. I did it at a UFC in Calgary. I was just there randomly and it was Saturday and I was like, okay, well, this will be the first day.
Right.
And then we had a show in Montreal at the festival.
Right.
Where we invited a bunch of people. It was on the Monday and we invited a bunch of people in the audience to come on mushrooms.
Oh, really?
And the comics did it. All the comics pushed out except Dan Soder.
Oh, really? Dan was the only
Dan Soder and me are the only ones. Yeah.
And did you perform on them?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I've done it a couple times before.
Really?
Yeah. As long as you can like rely on your material,
yeah,
then you're fine because you have that as a base.
Just climb into your act.
Yeah. But sometimes like you want to go out of it.
Yeah.
And then just sort of let yourself. The pauses seem like way longer than they are.
Right.
You're like, I haven't talked in 10 minutes. And then you listen. It was like 2 seconds instead of one.
So, but when you were driving cross country on your way into, on your caravan to show business.
Yeah.
You had not done any of this.
Uh-uh.
So you got through college without doing anything.
Yeah.
For me, it was all because of college.
Mushrooms?
Yeah, all of it. Because that's where I was experimenting and doing a bunch of stuff. And
where'd you go?
I went to Rider, which was in New Jersey.
Okay.
Rider University and
liberal arts.
Yeah. And I was by the time I got out and I was still doing stuff, but then I kind of started stopping when I realized I wasn't as funny doing stuff as I was when I was straight.
Yeah, I had this talk with Brendan Walsh and he was like, realistically, even on pot, I'm worse on stage.
Right.
It might help like on a weekday when you're just trying to riff and think of some stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you got a showcase or any sort of like specific order set.
Right. When you're putting it down. So do you smoke every day?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yeah, almost every day.
So you have the medical thing from?
Yes, every day. Holding on to the 3 days last year I didn't smoke. Somehow makes me a better person. Yeah, every day.
From when you get up in the morning or do you like
No, I wait.
You wait till?
Yeah. Till I'm bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So by noon.
I try to take care of errands and stuff.
Right.
I really try to be a responsible drug user.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. This is a good system.
At least get out of the house. Once I'm out, then I can like keep doing the errands. But if I don't leave and I start smoking, then I'm never going to.
Because that's what I felt. It really shrinks your world. It brings it. You can easily. And I saw friends do that where they ended up just in their apartment and they never really
that's
left.
That's fine.
Yeah, and they want girlfriends and stuff. It's like, well, they're not just going to drop into your apartment.
Yeah.
You kind of have to get out there.
But I mean, maybe it's just California, but there's an occasional woman who just likes smoking reefer.
Right.
And watching, you know, TV.
And hanging out.
Yeah, it's great. Those are great relationships. And like once or twice a week, you can go out.
So you started up when you started comedy, basically? Did you feel like the drug use was a kind of an impetus for you getting into it or just opening things up later.
Or
it was way later.
Yeah. Mushrooms took me a few years.
Right.
I did them once like real lightly.
Uh-huh.
But then I tried them again, like had a heavy. And then I remember at the end of it, just sitting in my car. It was in the 3rd Street Promenade.
Uh-huh.
We went on, it was July 3rd. We didn't realize it was a national holiday the day before. And there's all these kids around. We're like, this was a bad idea. we saw somebody getting arrested and that freaked us out a little bit.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I just sat in my car for like 5 hours just crying and like thinking about all the good parts of my life.
Really?
Yeah. And I was just thinking about different people and how I should tell them. Like people like you, let's just say. I would never say like, you're actually a really funny comic.
Right.
And then on this mushroom trip, I was able to like, why? Why are you holding on to not telling people nice things?
Right.
And I wrote Chris Fairbanks a letter on Facebook right then. I was like, hey man, you have an interesting delivery style. I think that's really cool the way you like intentionally like misspeak and then go off on a riff on that thing.
Right.
It was really, it's really freak. Fucking mushrooms, man.
It was great.
Yeah.
It made you a nicer person.
It does.
Yeah.
It centers you. It like takes away your ego for a second so you can really see yourself from outside.
Yeah.
You just view your behavior as what it is instead of like putting bias on it.
Yeah. No, it's really, I mean, it's been forever. I don't know.
If I find you mushrooms, will you do some June 22nd, 23rd, or 24th?
I think I have to chaperone a class trip.
That's the Monday.
This is the problem. This is the problem with my life.
Yeah.
It's like, there's other people that count on me now.
Yeah, parents, so. it's tough.
Right.
I usually tell parents to like lock your kids in a crate in the garage
right.
for safety.
Right.
And then, God, that's, yeah, with kids.
Yeah, I mean, it all bears down. I mean, there's this huge life now around me. And you know, there are definitely times where I feel like I've gotten away from it, and it would be great to just kind of kick the doors open again and creatively, just purely creatively. Yeah. Like, my desire isn't really to smoke pot and hang out in the park or watch a movie. It's purely, let me have my notebook next to me and do it, and just let me, and go through it just for that perspective. Because now you're able to look at it from another point of view.
Yeah, and you want to be able to bring some of those things back because you forget real fast.
Right.
Like all the truths of the universe, like
right.
it just leaves your mind as soon as you're done with it.
It's really true. But now you...
I tell everybody, like, have notebooks and pencils or pens around.
Yeah.
Like, wherever you're going to do it, just have them in different rooms.
Yeah, for sure. Now, when you could do this little festival, though, I remember people not being able to handle it and having a bad time. Does that happen at the Malibu House?
We didn't end up doing it there. We did it in La Jolla Comedy Store condo the first year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Went down there on a Monday, made sure, like, no comic would stay. Like, they could stay Sunday, but tell them they have to, like, you know, like, fumigate or something. So they got to leave. Yeah. And then we got there, and the cleaning crew was all there. They were making, paellas and, like, going nuts. And we're like, oh, you guys, I don't want to be an asshole, but we're going to do a lot of drugs.
This is going to get weird.
Yeah, you got to take your kids and get out of here. There was like a 6-year-old there.
I remember a couple times people really having a bad time with it, and it can really get away from some people.
Yeah, I've never seen a real bad trip. I've seen people go like, oh, I can't be with you guys right now and just have to leave, but they still had a good time overall. But like, even if you have a bad trip, people are so scared of it. It's 5 hours.
Right.
You'll be fine.
Exactly. I always felt like when things were getting weird, like when you saw the guy getting arrested or whenever that kind of thing would happen, all you had to do was remember you were on them.
Yeah.
And you're fine.
Yeah.
And I remember...
Just like, this is the drug.
Right. Oh, right. Oh,
okay.
I'm high. And, that's why my brain's playing tricks on me.
Yeah.
And I remember one guy just being bad on it, and he just started wandering into the woods and talking, and we tried to tell him what he was on, and he was looking at us like, get away from me. And it was really...
Hear all the problems.
And then you want to help him, but you're like, if I stay near him, I'm going to catch this. So we just left him in the woods.
We went hiking last time at some state park.
I love that.
Oh, it's great.
That's the best.
But one of a forest ranger came and told everybody to keep it down.
Uh-huh.
And this one guy has like a problem with authority, and that freaked him out.
Oh, no.
It was all great. And then he ended up hitchhiking away. Yeah, like he wandered off, which was fine, but then he called one of us, called my friend Matt, and he goes, hey, man, I'm at the McDonald's. And he's like, where? I'll come find you. Where are you? He goes, I don't know, like a few miles away. And he goes, oh, well, you're on your own, man. That's the way I'm getting there. So enjoy your journey.
You kind of want to help. You're like, become this little family when you're doing it, but then if someone leaves, you're like, there's a limit to how much you can help.
Once you leave, your adventure's on your own now.
I remember we were one time, I think this is the best drug story that I kind of was peripherally involved in. We were seeing the Grateful Dead in Hartford, Connecticut when I was in college.
Nice.
And there was, you know, you'd go to these shows and people would start tripping and stuff, and then they wouldn't get in. So they just hang out in the parking lot or do whatever. And this one kid who was a friend of a friend was flying on acid, and he's walking through Hartford, Connecticut, just in through the city. And as he's peeking, he goes past a parking garage and the car pulls up, a Lexus pulls up. The car attendant gets out of the car and goes, here you go, sir. Just at the time he's crossing the driveway. So the guy thought that this guy, it was his Lexus. So he was flying. He's just like, well, thank you. And he gets in the car and starts driving it. And the only thing in the car, in this pristine Lexus, is a tape sticking out of the cassette thing. So he pushes it in. It's a tape all about Jesus.
Whoa.
And how the Lord will save you. And he,
whoa.
Yeah. So we catch up with him at the hotel like that night, and he comes in. He said, God gave me Alexis. And we're like, no, he didn't. And so we had to like talk him down and get the keys from him and just leave it in the parking lot. Could you imagine? You would think.
Wow. Yeah. God gave him Alexis, talked about Jesus.
Just drove around for hours.
It all makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. It all happened. Is that insane?
I like to say, like, any sort of psychedelic drug use, any sort of psychedelics, the universe has a way of looking out for you.
Yeah, right.
Just providing you with fun, interesting things.
Yeah. So you do it twice a year or once a year, or is there no real rule?
Yeah, I try to do it at least once a year,
yeah.
And then really it's a summer drug, so mm-hmm. At some point people are like, hey, we're all going to you want to come? And it's like, yeah, all
right, right.
I'll come. So I do it a few times through the summer.
That's
people
good.
Give it to me on the road sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but I'm like, what am I going to... I got radio tomorrow and a show. I need an all-day situation.
Right. I'm flying out early on Sunday.
Yeah.
I can't possibly...
I'm not doing it on a plane.
Right. Yeah. Well, I like your responsible use of it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're definitely... You're keeping your life together and taking care of all of your stuff. And then, do you write? Do you write it down, your comedy? Or do you work mostly
not
on stage?
Really. I have these little notebooks, these Moleskine notebooks that I love.
Right.
Because they're small enough to fit in my pocket.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice little size.
And they're still hard enough to not bend over in your pocket.
Oh, that's good. But then your writing is, look how tiny your writing is.
Yeah, I think it's a sign of Alzheimer's.
So this is just for ideas. You're not working out
just
stuff.
Just ideas. And occasionally I'll write free form, like for 2 pages of that.
Right.
But rarely. And then before I go on stage, I'll just look at the ideas, just topics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then go up and work it out on stage. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And it never ends up written down after you work it on stage, just in your head?
No. I don't want to say, like, a lot of comics, they always say, like, this is the best method for me because of this. And it's like, no, it's really the only one you've tried. And you're just comfortable doing what you do.
It's very true.
Yeah. It's like in college, everyone's like, I'm better at cramming. Like, no, that's the only thing you do.
Right.
You tried studying an hour a day for the whole semester. It would work way better for you.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of times I'll try and change it up just because of that.
Uh-huh.
Like I got into a thing where it's like, I can only write on a computer. That's the only way I can do it. And it's like, now I'm lugging around a computer. And it's like, no, just I can write in a notebook. And then
I heard that writing in a notebook, like free, like with your hand, sticks into your memory a lot harder.
I believe that completely. But I'll move stuff into the computer, like if I'm working on a long set or like a long special or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And or if, even sometimes just if I'm trying to work something out for some reason on stage, it's not happening. I'll just sit there and because I write so much more quickly on a computer.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll just try and spit stuff out just for an exercise in my head.
Damon Wayans told me once when I was starting to just write for 10 minutes. Well, you write a lot, huh?
I write a good amount. Like an hour.
A day. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I try and do it every day, but, you know, Sundays I usually don't write because I've done everything for the weekend and now I'm spent and just letting my brain. Monday I'll kind of reboot.
So you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath, right?
And also this.
That way I learned from Chariots of Fire.
That's true. And you don't want God to be mad at you when you're trying to build your life.
With new material. Hey, come on. Why don't anything come to me?
Right.
Jesus.
But I feel, for me, I'll work some stuff out on stage, but I always like looking at it. I always like seeing, because then I can see the holes. I can see where it's not working, where it's kind of fat and I'm wandering around. But I was always envious of guys that can just carry stuff in their head.
Yeah, I always find that when I wrote, it would make me, and this was also this something I formed in the first year of comedy, which probably doesn't apply to me at all anymore.
Right.
But it seemed too regimented. When it came out, it sounded like material.
Uh-huh.
Instead of just me talking.
Right.
So if I hit like topic points.
Yeah.
In a bit, you know, like these are the 6 things I got to say. So hopefully you'll say it in a real natural way.
Right. That's good. I love that about your style is it feels very organic. It feels really conversational and very, very much in the moment.
Yeah. I finally, after like 6 months, of my girlfriend moving out from Maryland. I did it for 6 months on my own, then she came, and I wouldn't let her see me for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then when I finally did, she was like, yeah, it was good. But it was just, she's like, you seem funnier in the dining hall.
Right.
You know? And then we just came up with the word contrived. And I tried, no matter what, to stay away from that.
Right.
From anything that sounds contrived at all.
That's good.
And so I was at the store today. It's like, that's not how you talk.
Right.
Stop.
Right. That's
yeah,
good.
That's really formed a lot of my comedy because of that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it really works. And it's, do you find that, though, when you start honing it down, like for your specials or for your when you're going to record something, does it... How are you staying in the moment for that?
Yeah, well, sometimes if I just do straight material all the time and don't riff at all, don't do crowd work, the Comedy Store is really good for crowd work because then you could do 2 minutes of crowd work and you could set your bar.
Right.
Like, this is what I want everything to sound like.
Right.
So, you know, it looks terrible when you're doing a bunch of crowd work and then you jump into the announcer voice.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, it'll level it all out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that like hosting, like when I hosted for years at the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
When I was starting out, and I felt like, oh, this is really valuable because I have to go between my material and talking to this guy in between acts, and it really made everything much more conversational.
Yeah,
it sounds
different.
Like when you were a fraud.
You felt like you were,
if you were just it was very jarring.
You could hear it.
Yeah.
You could hear. Oh, this is a bit.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, but when I do the material too much, then it does become like these same words in the same order.
Yeah.
So I try to mix up the order of bits.
Right.
As much as I can, then decide on it or late. But sometimes it like gets bad and I have to like remember, like talk this out. Talk
right.
It,
instead right.
of like act it.
Oh, that's really interesting. We're listening to Come to Papa on Sirius XM 99. I'm here with Ari Shaffir. He is a great comedian. He's just moved to New York City. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's really good. Go to arishafir.com and you can buy his latest comedy specials and also look up his podcast, Skeptic Tank, which is very funny. And you can tell from his soothing voice in this interview that he's a good host as well. Tell me about the movie you did.
It was a sketch movie. It was really not great.
But it was super corny. I haven't seen it, but it's pretty, it looks insane.
Yeah. It's just it's the ShamWow guy. It was his dream for the last like 15 years.
Oh,
he took all his ShamWow money and he just pushed it into this movie.
Really?
Yeah, and he got Adrian Brody to be in it.
Oh, that's so funny because when I saw the trailer for it, I thought it was a joke about the ShamWow. I didn't realize he really.
It's his.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he has this really, like, kind of, his sense of humor is, it's corny. It's a corny sense of humor.
Uh huh.
He likes shtick.
He likes shtick, but it looks like it's outrageous stuff.
Yeah. So the stuff I did, I had to fight him on. I was like, no, we're not doing shticky stuff.
Right.
We're going to do, if you wanted me to do my thing, I'm going to do it.
Well, how did he find, because it's Adrian Brody, Rob Scheider.
Yeah. Michelle Rodriguez.
And how did you know the ShamWow guy?
He called me randomly.
Really?
Yeah. Because the guy who was helping him write it was, like, I think, the editor of Chuckle Monkey, or one of those early like websites.
Right.
Ken Pringle. And he was like, yeah, see if Ari can give you some of those sketches he used to do. He used to do these amazing racist sketches where I just fuck with ethnic people, I guess. And so he called me. I was like, they're not mine, but I can do more if you want.
Right.
And he was like, yeah. But I was like, we have to pay the right amount of money to make it look good.
Right.
Because I've had other people go like, we'll just give you a few a few hundred bucks. And I'm like, no, hidden cameras, they're expensive.
Right.
Yeah, so he was like, yeah, fine, let's do it.
And so did you know it was in the context of a movie?
Yeah. I mean, he told me what it was, and I was like, all right, but let's, yeah, I got like a, it's just me fucking with people. So I got like I went to a Jewish market, and, dressed up as a priest, and had them try to sign a petition to apologize for the killing of Christ. I got a driving school in Koreatown.
Right.
And only took like Asian drivers, and then just screamed in fear, no matter how safely they were driving. I would just scream at every 1 mile an hour turn. Like, watch out! Yeah, just shit like that.
And how did it come all together? So it was like your sketch, and then they'd show an Adrian Brody
just,
part.
It was kind of like a Kentucky Fried movie, where it's just a bunch of different ones loosely pulled together, you know.
Right.
Those things never work.
Right.
I'm shocked he got it in a movie theaters.
He got
really
it in
shocked.
Theaters. Yeah. It was in theaters. Inappropriate comedy.
Yeah. When I started seeing the commercials on it for it, I was like, what? You did it? How did you do it?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So have you talked to him since it came out?
I talked to him once since it came out.
How was he feeling?
He pulled back after that. I don't think great. He was really hoping it would. You ever see somebody that has just expectations and you want to be like, hey, man, like a new comic.
Right.
We're like, well, if I do well, when can I get on Letterman? You're like, oh, I can't even tell you how far off you are from where. He goes, no, I'm going to do, like, let's say you do amazing.
Right.
It's just still doesn't work that way.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the forces are going to slow you down.
I was booked in Vancouver for the week that it premiered. The Comedy Mix, and he goes, well, can you cancel that? And I was like, no. And he's like, what's if it's big and we need to get you on late night shows? I'm like, dude, they book those weeks in advance. No matter how big it is.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. They're not canceling someone for me.
They're not going to stop the guest who's planned. Yeah. We've got to get Ari in.
If I shot a bunch of people, then maybe.
Right.
Then I could see it where it's like time sensitive.
It's hilarious. How long did it stay in theaters?
Like 2 weeks, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I just stopped looking.
It's great, though. It really is cool, though.
Yeah.
I have to say, even if it is madcap and insane, it's great. I mean, it really is cool that you're in with these guys.
Yeah.
And it's a movie and you're with these guys.
I'm in with Oscar award winner Adrian Brody. Yeah. I have no place with him at all.
That's
yeah.
insane. So did you...
What happened to that guy's career?
I don't know. I guess he just does whatever he wants.
He's top shelf for a while.
But when he was in...
King Kong?
No, the Woody Allen, Midnight in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
It was great when he played Salvador Dali.
Oh, really?
I am Dali. Did you ever see that movie?
Uh-uh.
It's a good one. It's really good. And yeah, he plays Salvador Dali and he's still amazing.
Oh, good.
He's one of those guys just great to look at.
Yeah, he is.
You know what I mean?
Classic face.
Yeah.
When he did that commercial for like Right Guard or whatever, they had like three cool people. It was him. It was the cool guy from Outkast.
Right.
What's his name? Andre 3000.
Right.
And then somebody I've never heard of, like a race car driver.
Right.
But I'm like, he looks cool, Adrian Brody. walking.
Yeah. It's like every time I put on a suit, I'm like, I think I'm going to look like that. And I end up looking like a car salesman. He also did that Stella commercial, the beer one.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird.
Yeah, you're right.
It was like, what movie is this? And I was like, oh no, it's a beer commercial.
Yeah. They have a few like that. Like Brad Pitt did a Heineken one.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I wonder how they get those celebrity, like big time guys to do
big
those.
Big time money.
It has to be.
Big time money. That's it.
Carrot Top, I remember for like the height of 1-800-COLLECT was making $1 million.
Really?
Yeah. That's a lot.
It's a lot of dough. Yeah. I'll sell beer.
For 2 days of work, maybe?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did a commercial with Tiger Woods. We had to fly out to Orlando.
Oh, yeah?
That's his deal. He goes, I don't go anywhere for these things.
Oh, really?
People come to me. And they're like, yes, sir.
What was that?
It was for Tiger Woods Golf.
Oh, yeah?
Me and Steve Renazzisi, comedian from the league, we just talked trash to him.
Oh, really?
While we played Tiger Woods Golf. We had to try to get him to, like, be vocal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
That's cool.
They were like, make sure to be, this is pre-scandal, but they're like, you can't be dirty around him. Don't curse.
Wow.
As soon as he comes in, he's like, what's up, fuckers? You ready to do this shit? And I'm like, what? Why did you? I'm like, of course that's who he is.
Of course.
He grew up on a Muni golf course.
Right.
And then later, obviously.
Yeah, he's a badass.
Yeah. Guy fucks constantly.
Right. In parking lots.
In a parking lot of a Friendly's? What was it?
Yeah, like an Applebee's or something.
Wow.
You buy not a even dumpster.
Like, yeah, not even like I met a waitress and like I took her back to my place. No, just there. We'll do it there. Right. In between the courses.
And play amazing golf as a result of it.
Uh-huh.
And then when they all straightened out, it all got weird till this weekend.
Do you ever hear Burr's bits on the divorce?
Yeah.
He just eviscerates the girl.
Right.
Like, in what world do we live in where you could have a dollar?
Right.
You've never made a putt. So good.
No, but this is interesting, though, Ari, because you did... this amazing movie, but then you've also appeared in a bunch of commercials,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like LA was kind of a good place for you for that end of it.
Yeah, it was. And I was on Rogan's podcast a lot, which was helping my draw.
Right.
I just had this romantic idea about New York comedy. For like 5-6 years, I've wanted to come out here.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
Yeah, and I've just wanted to be, at least for a few years, to be part of the scene.
Yeah.
It's cool, right? And then
it's
so
great.
Much more time you can do.
It's about being a comedian. When you're here, you are a comedian. There's no other distraction. I mean, you'll still have your auditions and stuff like that once in a while, but the dominant feeling is you're our comic and you're going to be in these shows with these great people every single night, as many as you'd like. And you're going to the city is just dictating that you've come here because you're going to do that as an artist. And that is the thing that you are.
Yeah, it looks more like an art here.
It is.
Instead of LA where it's like, oh, that's what you do in the business?
Right.
That's the worst thing you can possibly do.
Why do you do that?
Yeah, it's one above a mime. That's all, right. That's all we are in the totem pole.
I know. You really feel it. So, but do you have any anxiety about unplugging from the acting end of it? Or
not really.
Stuff?
Commercials, the last year or so, I hadn't really done much anyway because I was gone the road so much. Stand-up right. has taken off.
Yeah.
So unless you're here on Fridays, you can't do callbacks.
Right.
That's when they usually are. So I'd constantly miss them. My agent would get mad at me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'll give it one more pilot season just to,
yeah,
for fairness sake, and then I'm out.
Isn't it amazing, the pilot season thing? Just now, like right now, all the shows are being, all the upfronts are happening now. So I was like online checking out. So what's going? Because I had a couple of friends that had pilots
your friends
and stuff.
Are in, yeah. yeah.
And then you're like, and then you realize, oh, they picked up that show because that production company also has three things on the air, and there's a huge penalty for that. And it doesn't matter that my friend yeah. is super funny and made this funny thing.
Yeah, none of that shit matters.
Doesn't matter none at all. It. It's amazing. I mean, because you're not even aware of it when you go through it.
And there's so much. It's not even if it's your show. It's like if you're the Kramer or the Brad Garrett of your show.
Yeah.
You're like, this has very little to do with me.
Right.
But it'll make me a bankroll of cash if it goes.
Right, yeah. And you just don't. You think, oh, I'm making something purely to make it as good as I possibly can and possibly get on here.
Yeah.
And you're not even aware that, oh, the guy that's also hiring me has all these other things going on.
Dude, I went to, they had these showcases for, I think Showtime was doing half hours, right when I was starting, 12, maybe 13 years ago.
Right.
And they had some at the, I think Messina Baker was doing them. They had some at the Comedy Store where I worked.
Right.
And then they had the next day at the Improv. The showcases, and I went to watch. I think Carl LeBeau was doing it at the Improv, so I went over to watch him. And I was in the bathroom afterwards, at the Improv, and I heard two guys peeing. Might have been Rick Messina, might have been someone else from them.
Right.
But it was him peeing with a guy next to him. They were talking about like there were two black comics that had showcased.
Uh huh.
And he goes, I don't remember their names.
Uh huh.
And he goes, well, guy A was better. He was funnier, but guy B has more credits, so let's book guy B. Probably be a better idea.
Really?
Got more, and I was like, why they showcase then?
Yeah, why'd you, right.
I'm just washing my hands going like, this is awful.
Terrible.
The guy had a better showcase. He did good.
He worked hard on his set. He worked all day. He showered.
Showered for this. That was the first time I saw a problem with the way things are done.
I know. Well, that's why here and doing your thing is going to be really healthy artistically for you.
Yeah, artistically,
sure.
Exactly. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I'm doing the opposite.
You're going moving to LA?
I'm always in both places, and I have a house out there, and my kids really want to go back. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe I'll go back just for a little bit. It'd be good to be on TV more anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, let me just go. We'll see.
Where'd you shoot The Marriage?
Another year. That was done in New York.
Okay.
And because that was Seinfeld. And
Come to Papa was the first and possibly last full sitcom I auditioned for.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's another reason why it's easy for me to leave LA, where it's like, I never go out for shit.
Right. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. It's been a long memory.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. I remember I got a call back and my agent was like, really? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. And
yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
After that.
Nothing. we have a hard time when we go out there and end up starting to audition for that stuff. It's really, Jerry Seinfeld has the greatest line about that stuff, because when he was doing his show,
yeah,
he said that when actors would come in for a part, you felt when they walked in the door like they've been waiting for this their whole career and preparing for it. And when a comedian comes in to read for something, you feel like you're ruining their whole afternoon.
That's how it is. Sometimes you're like, what time? In Santa Monica. Fuck you.
Right.
I'll be there, but
at 2 o'clock.
You. Yeah.
It's because you get the call like the night before and you're like, I had a great day planned tomorrow.
Yeah, you have golf ready to go.
Right.
And then you get that right at 7 p.m. You're like, hey, cancel whatever you had.
Right.
Damn it.
jeez, it's going to ruin my whole day. And yeah. your night, because you got to prepare for it.
Yeah, you got to stop what you're doing. Whatever you're doing then, it's like, I got to read these lines.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
So it's funny because I was...
You really do.
I know, exactly. Over and over and over. Do you go out for film?
Barely at all.
Yeah.
Really nothing. I just got an agent.
Yeah, you
first, did. Like, legitimate agent, so I should go out more, I guess.
They must be happy that you're moving to New
York. No, they did say, like, you have to come back for pilot season.
Right.
If you're leaving. I was like, all right, maybe next year. All right.
But there's so, it's so, look, when things are getting picked up now, like I said when I was looking last night, it's like Michael J. Fox and Sean mm-hmm. Hayes and it's all big names. It's all,
yeah.
they're trying to do, like, little movie openings for these because they really have
the
to
shows.
Yeah, because they have to open big. It's like there's so many guys, John Mulaney, Jim Gaffigan, that had stuff up, Craig Robinson. It's like
these really?
And they're legit guys, but they all these
don't even get picked up?
No, it's all the big guys that get.
Maybe it's so better, it's like, just to be on someone else's show.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
You know what? I just as a recurring on Old Christine with Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was great. And it was fun. And it's so little pressure
because yeah.
you're not in the writer's room and you're just kind of hanging out and they just give you lines and you just try to be funny.
Yeah.
And then so many people see you. People are still coming up to me and saying, hey, I just saw you on that.
That show's on late night too. It's on syndicated.
They run it all the time.
That's good.
It's great. That's all you need as a comic. You just need people to see your face so they know that you're still out there.
Comics go, oh, cool. You're not about to commit suicide.
Right.
Awesome.
Right. You have something else to talk about.
Yeah. I never know what to say when people are like, oh, I saw you in this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I did. I did that.
I know. I don't. Or you always go, thank you. And
yeah.
It's like, then you realize, oh, they weren't complimenting
me. They weren't complimenting you.
They were just pointing out that they saw it.
Observing. That's all they were doing. You can't say thank you. I'm waiting. I'm so scared of them going, oh, I didn't like it.
Right.
I'm just telling you I saw it.
Right. So, but it's funny because I saw that you were moving back here, or I kind of got the sense that you were moving back. And then I was reading stuff on Alec Baldwin, and the first thing I saw online was, that's why I'll never leave New York! Exclamation point. And I have all these cool people that are just talking to me about that they're staying in New York as I'm packing my bags.
When are you going?
I'm going to keep my place here, of course, but I'll be back and forth, but predominantly, we're just tipping the scales out there, July.
Are you taking family out?
Yeah, they're going to go to school there for the next year.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah, whatever.
I guess. Yeah, I guess.
You have a girlfriend?
Not really. I just date around. I'm sort of happily single.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
How old are you?
39.
And you don't have a
just
girlfriend?
Just in the last like six years, I've just been like, I don't want to have a relationship.
That's pretty great.
I don't like the responsibility.
Yeah.
That comes with it.
It's a lot.
To not being able to take my, well, that's, you know, but stuff like that where like I got stuff to do.
Right.
Family's different than relationships, I guess, but
no,
it's similar.
It's another, you've basically opened a business. You've opened a side business.
Yeah. I don't like not being able to just whatever you want to do, just do it. If I want to go play cards in the middle of the night, I don't have to call anybody.
Yeah.
I can go out with my friends to go watch a movie.
Right.
It's not about like having sex with a lot of people.
Right.
That's a nice side effect, but that's not what it's about. It's about not having a chain around me.
Right. It's the freedom.
Yeah.
No, I have no freedom.
None.
None. No. Like, no. If I wanted to leave this interview
yeah.
and just go to the movies.
Yeah. You couldn't do it. You'd have to call.
I'd have to call. What do you mean? But what do you mean you want to just go? It's 2:00. But what they're getting out of school soon and then.
But like even if something cool, like if Seinfeld, you're friends with him, right?
Yeah.
If he was happy to be here, I'd be like, Tom, hey, let's go see this movie real quick. Daytime. You would have to call.
I'd
first
still
to get
call.
Permission.
Right. But then I would be like, but Jerry's making me, so I'm going to just do
blame it on him.
Right. Because
yeah.
he's super cool and famous. I can get away with it.
Yeah. As your excuse.
Right.
But I lied to a girl. What?
If I'm like, Ari wants me to go to the movies with him, she'd be like, what? Get your ass home.
Yeah.
I'm like, but he's a nice guy. He's friends. We're hitting it off. Well, you got to get the care. And I got to take the kids to gymnastics, and then I got to come back. And you're just going to go to the movies and have fun?
God, that's the part of child raising that they don't really share with you. And they're like, you got to have a kid. You'd love it.
Right.
Where it's like, not all the time you wouldn't love it.
Right. A lot
gymnastics,
of times not.
Fucking carpool. That's not, you don't think of carpool. I gotta drive a bunch of bratty kids to their school.
Do you nap every day?
Nuh-uh.
No?
Nope.
You have enough energy to keep going?
Yeah.
What time do you wake up?
Whenever.
Well, that's why.
Yeah. I don't use an alarm clock.
What's, like, if you're home and you don't have radio to do or an audition, if it's just a regular RE day.
Yeah.
Do you ever get up at 7?
It's a pee, I guess. But I can't imagine. I mean, even if I'm coming from East Coast and I'm going to the West, so it's like, let's say I was waking up at 10 or 11, I'm tired, so I went to sleep early.
Right.
If I woke up at 7, I'm going back to sleep. There's nothing going on. Before 10? There's nothing happening in any city.
There's morning news programs.
First of all, that's the worst television. It's always like the positive, like Sports Illustrated spin on whatever story it is. It's never like hard hitting and like this is really terrible.
No, there's a lot of fake laughing and
yeah.
There's women
abducted in Cleveland. You know, fun things to do while you're in Cleveland. The pastrami house. They just never give you the full fucking darkness.
There's also, you get to see like the guys outside there opening shops and spraying down the sidewalk.
Yeah. Oh, that you get to see.
You see that in the morning?
It's nice, I guess. I don't mind being out there. Every once in a while, I do get up at like 9:30, 10,
ooh,
and I feel like a winner. I am out, you get a couple errands done, like it's noon, and I've got everything taken care of.
Oh, I want your life. I want to eat mushrooms and just sleep till noon.
Dude, you should do it with your wife. Get some babysitters. Take a day for you and your wife to go out somewhere and do some mushrooms.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you guys like each other, right?
I don't know.
I mean, don't tell me now if you're having trouble or not.
No, like, it's going great. But I'm afraid if we ate mushrooms, we might look at each other in a different way. She's not. I don't think she would do well on it.
Really?
Yeah, I think she'd be nervous and then make me nervous.
Yeah, people say, like, I don't think I'd be good on those things, but... Man, everybody I know loves it. And they do all these studies now and how it's one of the some of the most spiritual moments of your life are mushrooms. Like legitimate John Hopkins studies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Of like they would try to isolate the psilocybin in there so they can use it for positive effects.
Really?
Yeah.
What does it trigger in our brains that what's laying dormant that
I don't really know.
Is it adding something to your brain or is it releasing something in your brain?
I think it might be releasing something, but I don't know. I'm speaking out of my ass.
Right. Well, but you're the mushroom authority.
Yeah, I should know more about the science of it, though.
If you have a national holiday and millions of people are doing it because of you and you're their god, you should at least pretend. You should at least
millions,
pretend
to know. You're the god.
You should at least pretend to know what you're talking about.
I should do some more research. The only thing I did was I asked my suicide doctor once. I was like, hey, I heard you can't take mushrooms if you're on this type of drug. He's like, you're on a different type. Thank you. That was it.
Your suicide doctor?
Yeah, that's what I call him, I guess.
Have you been going to therapy for a long time?
No. No therapy. Just I tried therapy.
Who's the suicide doctor?
The pill man.
What?
Psychologist, whatever just prescribes you the pills that make you stop thinking about suicide all the time. Whatever you call him. Psychologist, psychiatrist.
Did you have a problem with it? Did you come close to suicide?
I thought about it a whole lot.
Did you? When? Like what age?
A few years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was, it was just not, I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Really?
Yeah. Have you had depression?
Not real depression, no.
Okay. It's just, it's kind of like, it's a bad name for it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like when you're depressed.
Right.
It's similar to that.
Uh-huh.
But then it just never goes away. Like
really?
24/7, it dampens everything. Even in happy moments, like, they're just not as good. Like, A's go down to B minuses.
Right.
So even if you win the lottery, you're like, yeah, all right.
Uh-huh.
All right. And then back.
And you just can't snap out of it.
Yeah.
Were you trying to do things just to...
Just try.
Walk,
exercise,
yeah.
Get some sunlight. But the problem is, like I have friends with people who never had it. And they're like, can't you just get up and do stuff? It's like you can't even get up to go to the fridge to eat.
Wow.
So then I just thought about ending. It's more just a sleep. You just want to sleep.
And is it ending it because you're so overwhelmingly sad, or you just want release? You want to escape it.
You want to sort of escape it. You want the game to be over.
Wow.
Because it's a bad game. You don't want to even turn around. You stop even seeing that it's possible to turn around.
And would all of a sudden the sky's clear after a certain point? A little while?
Yeah, but for very brief moments, like super good times, super good. Like if I get passed at some club that is never in, it would be like,
right.
It really would go away real fast.
Really?
The happiness. Yeah, and I remember pulling up next to a dump truck right outside Fairfax and Sunset.
Yeah.
Where that place is where the actors eat. It's open till 3 at the Griddle.
Right.
And I saw that they have a big gas tank on the outside. So it was right next to my car.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, man, if that blew up, I'd just be gone. And yeah. I just felt happy with the idea.
Wow.
I was too much of a coward to actually do it.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I realized eventually. I'm like, you're a pussy. That's why you're not doing it. I was waiting for the right moment.
How long were you fighting with it?
Like 2 or 3 years.
Did it just emerge? Like you weren't just this guy emerged. Like your whole life and all of a sudden you're always, dealing with it?
I was always happy-go-lucky, just like whatever happens, I'm happy just...
And is that purely an internal thing? This is like the mushroom question, but is that purely an internal thing or is it because you're living
this
in...
This is pre-mushrooms. Mushrooms helped me with it a lot.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It helped me with it a lot. Yeah. But it was pre-mushrooms, but it was just, yeah, internal. There's nothing, it's not like
you could have lived in a different place.
Yeah, what do you have
or...
to be depressed about? And it's like, it's not that.
Right.
Anything.
Right.
Like on a day, okay, this will be a good example. I like beautiful days.
Right.
Like yesterday was.
Yeah.
On a beautiful day like that in LA where it's sunny and everyone's smiling, I'm like, yeah, this is great. But then I'm like, oh, my car is empty on gas. I got to fill up. I hate getting gas.
Right.
It's a fucking errand. And I could only center on that. And not the awesome parts of the day where it's like, that's 40 seconds, man.
Wow. And so how long did this go? And so then you realize I need help.
Well, I told my friend, Rogan's manager, that I would like let it go that I was having these thoughts. And I was already going to see a therapist just because SAG covered it. So I was like, let me try.
Right.
She goes, have you brought this stuff up? You're constantly trying to think of suicide. I was like, no, you think that'd be
something I would share?
You should bring it up. I bet she'll be interested. She was. It turns out, though, that was her specialty was suicide, and her son was a doctor committed suicide.
No.
Yeah. So she told me, and she goes, I actually have a lot of books I can give you right now. But all I was interested in was like, how did he do it? She was like, pills. I'm like, because he could prescribe himself. That's a good one.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Yeah. I would get real interested in any sort of death.
Wow.
Yeah. Any suicide. I'd be like, how did he do it? Was there any lead up to it?
Yeah. What was the game plan?
Yeah.
So she prescribed something?
No. She just tried to like talk me through it. Couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't getting any better, really.
Right.
Saw somebody else. She had me take a couple different drugs.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she couldn't prescribe drugs. The first one couldn't prescribe drugs.
Right.
I don't know who gets what.
Right. The psychologist can, but the...
Yeah, psychiatrist right. and therapy. I don't know what the difference
yeah,
is. So the second
not
one tried, but it gave me terrible like sexual side effects.
Oh, yeah. Just having sex all over the place.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know what they were until I was doing it. And then I was like, couldn't never finish. And I was like, well, I don't know what's wrong with me. And then the girl told me like... Maybe it's your drugs. You're
right.
But I kept trying to switch, and then she just got fed up with me. She goes, well, I've given you all the ones I can give you.
Jeez.
There's bad people at their jobs out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anytime you have like a Robin Williams, you know, Dead Poets Society, that's one end of the spectrum.
Right.
And then you have another end of the spectrum.
Yeah. In every profession.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just scary.
Yeah. And then I got to another one that wouldn't take insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Rogan, he got sick of me talking about suicide all the time.
Oh, really?
And so he goes, yeah, I'm going to get you. This guy who helps my friend, I'm going to pay for it. And I was why, man? It's not going to do anything. I mean, I was defeated.
Wow. How long? A couple of years?
Probably 3 solid years.
Wow. Jeez, that's long.
Yeah. And then I started going to him. We tried one pill. Didn't work. Another pill didn't work. But the second pill gave me hyperphagia.
What's that?
It's you never feel full. So I would eat these epic, like, 2-hour-long meals. It was awesome.
And you don't feel full?
Never feel, like, full. You don't feel, like, hungry. You just don't feel...
Right.
You know how, like, when you eat something, if you're not, like, you can hate yourself and just keep eating?
Yeah.
You're like, you know what? I'm done. I've had enough.
Right.
I don't feel stuffed, but I don't have to.
Yeah.
So it'd be like that, where I'm like, I can have a little more. And then I have to tell myself, like... Ari, right? Like 7 plates of spaghetti is enough?
Jesus.
Right? Don't you know that that's probably good?
Think about this on the outside.
I would get high and I would just eat everything in sight, man.
And still depressed.
Still depressed. Yeah, that was a nice.
It sounds like high and eating tons of spaghetti, you'd be so happy.
It didn't do the job.
Jeez.
But then I finally found one and it worked and it was like, boom. I was like, oh yeah. This is what it feels like.
And it just cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't feel, it doesn't mess with any other part of your personality or your.
It made my comedy a lot better.
It did?
I could see things honestly. I wasn't trying to like be anything else.
Oh.
You know, and coming off that, then it became like, I just want to give my opinion on things. My actual opinion.
Interesting. Were you smoking pot the whole time you were depressed?
Yeah, and I asked, it would get heavier and heavier as I went, but I asked the doctor, I was like, so is marijuana, this has negative effects on depression, right?
He goes, right.
No.
Really?
Alcohol definitely does. Alcohol is a depressant.
Uh-huh.
It gives you short-term relief of depression, but long-term, very negative. He said the only studies he's seen is it's short-term relief of depression, long-term, no effect either way.
I personally had the opposite.
You would get depressed?
Yeah, like the day after.
Oh, really?
If I smoked and then the next day, I would just be in this funk. I'm like, what is it? Oh, I got high.
There's also come downs. People say they have that on mushrooms.
Right.
But I've never had that or on ecstasy either.
Well, we're all our own little test tubes.
Yeah.
Everything works different. Right, it's true. I mean, some guys...
people really talk about where it's like it's really bad the next day.
Yeah.
But I just want to do more ecstasy. Right. That's the only thing I've gotten.
Right.
What were you going to say?
So it cleared everything up and now your comedy's sharp and you just take this stuff and you're not depressed.
Yeah.
That's great.
And people try to give me reasons like, oh, it's because things are going better for you. I'm like, nope.
No.
That was not why.
You can't. I'm one of those people who I can kind of talk myself into any mood that I need to be in. Mm-hmm. Like if it's like, snap out of it.
I used to be that.
Come on, this is going to be a good day. And I can literally lift myself out. And I know from talking to people that that is so far from how other people's brains work.
Yeah.
And you can't tell someone who's really depressed, like, have an orange.
But like, look at Richard Jenny. They're like, what did he have to be depressed? Oh, I guess it must be because his shows weren't on TV anymore.
No.
Like, no, he's just mental disorder.
That's right.
I had to explain it to Brody Stevens once.
Right.
I was like, it's not, because it's got such stigma to it. It's just a sprain of your brain muscle.
Yeah.
Instead of your ankle muscle.
Right.
That's all it is. Just a sprain up there and it won't fix.
No. And you're right. And you're releasing different chemicals in a different way.
Yeah.
And it's different than mine.
Yeah. Just you look the same.
I love when Maria Bamford talks about it.
She's really great at like talking about it and expressing it.
Really great. It really makes sense.
I've had trouble. I asked her once. I was like, man, the way you do that, every time I go into that, it just gets like dark and serious.
Right.
But she's great at really expressing in a comedic way.
She really is. Because you see, oh, she's going crazy, but she's also being tortured at the same time. And then she's making it funny again.
Yeah. Her special's on Chill also.
Yeah. That Chill. Tell me about Chill. That's a cool place. There's some good specials on there.
Yeah.
Who are those guys?
They are, it's like a platform for artists. They have documentaries, stuff there too. Doug Benson just put his last documentary on there.
Uh-huh.
It's just a way to connect with like fans so they can get everything for $5, $10, whatever you price your stuff at.
And do they help you produce it?
Yeah. They gave me all the money for it. They put me in contact with these cool directors that had done like some of Burr's and some of Louis's.
Right.
And they were down with like me doing it the way I wanted to do it.
Oh, that's great.
You know, sort of like dirtier.
Yeah.
The look of it, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like I really hated that glossy Comedy Central.
Right, all blown out.
Yeah, I'm like, this isn't the way comedy looks.
Right.
I don't want to do this. It
right.
does for Dane, maybe.
Yeah.
But generally, I'm like, this is not what we do.
Right.
Let's show our experience.
Yeah.
No cutaways to the audience.
Oh, I hate that. I do the same thing.
Yeah. But Michelle Caputo, who was directing it, we were talking about some shot afterwards, like editing it.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, well, we can't use that. There's an exit sign right there in the shot in the background. I was like, what do you mean?
What's wrong with that?
But you can't. And I was like, why? She was like, oh, yeah, it's just a Comedy Central order that you can't have exit signs in there. I'm like, that's a stupid order.
Right.
It makes it looks like a place with an exit sign in it.
Right.
You're not only showing the exit sign, it's just way in the back. Who cares? No one notices that.
That's right. Oh, I always hated cutaways to the audience too, because there's always like one person who's just staring, thinking about their life, and then there's other people, and it's just it never matches to the joke.
Yeah, and they always have to show the race of the person you're talking about,
right?
Or someone similar. If you can't find an Indian, if you mention like an other race, black and white, you can find,
right?
But if you're like Pakistani, they're like, oh, show somebody like brownish,
right? This guy looks close.
Yeah, it's insulting. You don't know when to laugh.
Well, that's great. Now, do you feel like on Chill that a lot of people got to see it?
Yeah. Yeah. We still need to put it on a network to get it really, really seen.
Right.
But
you can move it there later.
Yeah. But it's also like time limit. They were like, how long do you want this? Like, we ended up shooting like 80 minutes and I cut out some, or maybe 85 minutes.
Yeah.
But then we got to 72 and they were like, do you want to cut it further? I'm like, do I have to?
Yeah.
People just getting it.
Right.
So there's no, doesn't have to fit into anything.
That's great.
So it's just the stuff I worked on for a year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, I'm really stoked with how it came out. Those guys are really cool creatively.
And people can get it on chill.com.
Mm-hmm. They let Maria. She wanted to do hers in front of her parents.
That is so brilliant. I still haven't seen it. And I love her so much. I'm just retarded that I haven't seen it.
Me neither.
It.
I really want to also. I don't know why I haven't.
It's just because it's so hard to digest things.
Yeah.
But she literally recorded it at her parents' house in front of her parents.
Yeah.
That's the only audience.
Yeah, because she talks about them a lot.
Right.
In her act. But yeah, that's fucking rad.
It's great.
And you can get, for the price of a cup of coffee,
right,
you can get this thing that tortured her for a fucking year.
I know.
Just have one cup today instead of two.
Yeah.
And it's even like, $5, I don't know about it. It's so little.
You're listening to Come to Papa on Sirius XM 99. I'm here with my good friend, Ari Shaffir.
There we go. Let's be good friends now.
Yeah. In the beginning, so you were just a guy I met. And he's a great comedian, and go to arishaffir.com. You can see he's touring around all over. He's going to be doing a ton of shows in New York City now that he lives here. And make sure you get his specials and check him out. Where are you living in New York?
East Village, Alphabet City.
Awesome. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
You didn't come here and go to Queens and feel
weird. That's what
everyone
told me to. But I was like, I'll go there after, maybe.
No, don't go there.
I'm never going to move back into the city if I don't start.
That's great. So where are you doing most of your spots?
Well, there's two clubs I'm in, The Stand and Stand Up New York.
Good.
And then I got Dom Marrero said he'd call Comic Strip for me.
Good.
The Cell is the one that I'm most worried about.
Yeah.
Just because I know it's one lady.
Right, Esty.
Yeah.
But you'll work there for sure. That's good. You're coming in. This is like, it's like you're coming in at a good point in your career, so it's not like you have to.
That's what Dom said. He goes, "You're going now,
right?
Why are you going now? Like, just for the stand-up, man." He goes, "Yeah, I like that.
Oh, it's great. Okay, yeah, it'll be fun to have you hanging at the Cellar.
Yeah, that's where I'm gonna end up hanging out most of the time anyway.
It's the best hang.
Yeah,
it's the best hang. You're around all the people that you know and love, and it's healthy."
Yeah, and I wanted to get a place. Like, I told everyone who was helping me look for a place, I'm like, I want a 30-minute or less walk from the Cellar. On a warm day, I want to be able to walk home.
That's right.
That's the romantic idea I have in my head.
I do it every night.
Really?
I walk out of my apartment through Washington Square Park.
Wow.
Onto the stage. It's the best.
That's great.
It's heaven.
I live 2 blocks from the Comedy Store in L.A.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
And I like that.
Did you keep your place?
For a little bit. I'm letting a door guy live there.
Yeah.
Who's got no money. Just fine. Just stay here. Get the mail or something.
Do you want to hang on to it so you can go back and forth, or do you?
They're tearing it down. I do want that. I had that idea, but they're tearing the building down. They got to pay us to leave.
Oh, wow.
Because West Hollywood laws are so good.
That's great.
Yeah. So they got to give us like 13 grand. So I'm keeping it until they do, because it's supposed to come like any day now, the notice.
That's great.
Yeah.
What are you talking about on stage now? Is anything majorly on your head, or are you?
Man, it's like I did that one. And I really worked hard at it, you know, and I took a few, like Bill Burr told this thing to Tom Segura, because I recorded, I did an album, Revenge of the Holocaust. And then I was like, I had this big talk with Louis in Montreal once about the hour a year. And I'm like, how do you do it?
Yeah.
And he broke it down. It was like this talk. It was really nice for him to talk from one venue to the other.
Right.
And then I was like, yeah, that's nice the way he says how to do it all. But I'm like, you get to put your stuff out on HBO.
Right.
Every year. I don't have that.
Yeah.
But then I recorded that album, which was like everything, you know, I led up to that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, why not just try to do another hour in a year?
Right.
Like, quit poo-pooing it because you can't, because you don't have HBO or whatever. So I'm like, just write it. Do another album. Who cares?
Right.
And so then Burr said this thing of like, it's 5 minutes a month. That's all an hour is.
Right.
5 minutes a month. Every comic in the world can do that.
Right.
You can do that as an open micer.
Right.
You did it as open micer.
Yeah, that's right.
You did 5 minutes a week.
That's right.
Can't repeat after that.
No.
And then I did it, but it was all stuff like, well, he goes, because Tom Segura asked him, like, what do you talk about? He goes, what's on your mind? What do you care about?
Right.
So I like sort of started thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like family, about how I don't want to buy into this stuff that everyone's selling me.
Yeah.
Family and children and just a lot of that.
That's great.
But this year I haven't had anything that's
really getting you.
Yeah, I really got to do that, make that list. It's only been 5 months, but I really got to now. I got to like, all right, dude, what's really on your mind? Let's go into it.
Are you worried that this new way of thinking of like, I have to do an hour in a year?
Yeah.
Because like when you did your first album, I'm sure there was things on there that were several years old, mm-hmm. at least, even 8 years old. And that, do you feel like we're shorting ourselves in the maturity of jokes? That, I mean, there are certain things get better.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you can't see it when you're working on it, but.
No, things absolutely get better.
Like 6 years into doing some bit, all of a sudden you find a new way to go, and it's this masterpiece.
Yeah, it's a cost sum analysis.
Yeah.
You ever see 6 Days to Air?
Yeah.
The South Park documentary?
Yeah.
He was like, I can keep working this. I have 6 days to shoot this. I can keep working this for weeks and weeks or a month, and it'll get 5% better.
Right.
But in the meantime, I could put out 6 more episodes.
Right.
It's like, yes, absolutely, some bits can get better. And there was a bit or two that I put in there in the special where I'm like, you know what? Take it out. Take the whole 9-minute bit out.
Yeah.
And I'll save it for next year.
Right.
I'll keep working on it.
Right. It's not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like I messed up like a few taglines in the middle and I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's tough getting stuck. Like I have to do this hour a year.
Right.
Because then we're like, well, what happens if it's totally not ready?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. For whatever you're doing in your life, for whatever reason.
Yeah. But I think that the amount of material you put out is better probably.
Yeah. I mean, people want to see it. And there's I didn't release for a long time and now I'm putting a bunch out and you can tell people are happy. They
want to see.
It's like when you love a band, you're like,
cool,
okay,
new album.
Yeah, yeah, cool, new album. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're not even beholden to it being like the greatest thing. You just want to see more from that artist.
You too. When they came out with new albums, I used to like them. And then it was like, oh, well, what are they going to do now? And it's like, either be good or bad, but you would just enjoy the new thing.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to, you're going to grow very quickly being here for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I'm excited about the idea of doing 3 spots in a night and then taking a night off.
You're not even going to have to worry about making your list. It's just going to happen just from being here. And when I come back from LA, every once in a while trips, I'll look at you and be envious as I'm going through
New York comedy.
As I'm doing my Laugh Factory 5 minute set. Well, this is really cool. I'm glad we got to sit down. Come to Papa. There you have it, folks. My conversation with Ari Shaffir. I hope you learned to love all things mushrooms. Hope you enjoyed it. I will be posting more in the coming weeks. Enjoy it. Enjoy the playoffs. Enjoy your life. And I'll talk to you next time.